I'm Nick Harcourt, and we're here at No Vacancy, and I've got John from Portugal the Man here.
I made it.
Great to see you.
Good to see you.
You're going to play some songs for us in a little bit, but want to talk about what's going on. New album, obviously, and we were talking before we started rolling about the fact that, well, it's been 6 years because there was a little interruption in the planet's life. When did you actually start making this record?
Yeah, so we started making the record, I think 2018. We met Jeff Basker, who is, somebody I've wanted to work with since 808s and Heartbreak. He made this album for Kanye, and it was like this really, to me, looking back on it, like this really obvious shift in, obviously, creative genius. I'm using the term genius loosely because it's all of us, like, we all work together and we all bring things to this.
Genii.
Yeah, he brought this guy into the fold, Jeff Basker. And it was these, just the sound of that record, like the synthesizers and just the chords, the harmonies, like these crazy vocoder auto-tuned stacks. Ever since I heard that, I've wanted to work with Jeff forever. Just never had the opportunity or just the right thing to put in front of him. And it finally came around. I mean, I feel so blessed to have a song like Feel It Still that broke through, and it really just opened up all these doors. When we met Jeff, though, we had been doing this tour of LA and New York, and like just sitting in with producers, we were kind of like, let's get back into that creative zone. We've been touring nonstop. I mean, it was all day. I mean, we were going nonstop. I mean, I remember the last day of our tour for Feel It Still, like promoting Feel It Still.
Right.
We were in Alaska. I just broke down in tears. I got off stage. I didn't realize the emotional, how much I had put out, and it all just came like flooding out. So leaving that tour, it was, let's get back in the studio. Let's be creative. We popped around all these places and we sat in with producers, and the whole thing was, let's go in, let's write a song in a day, let's try some stuff, see what works. And Jeff was my favorite because we showed up at his house out here, guitars, we have all of our stuff. Like, okay, you have a meeting with Jeff Basker. Showed up at his house, we're like knocking on the door with our guitars. Like, hey, we had a number one at radio. And like,
would you work with us?
Yeah, he opens the door and he's like, we're not recording music. We're sitting down to hang out and see if
it's going to work.
We're going to work together.
Yeah.
And from that point, I was like, this is my kind of people. Like, I like that he is not wasting his time with anything. He wants to get to know you. And it was just a really great, like, very organic start to everything. But that started in 2018.
Before we talk about the production and the process of making the album, you mentioned Feel It Still being a big song, and it was the crossover moment for you, which had been a long time coming. When you have a hit like that, how does that change things? As you said, it kind of opened some doors. How does it change things for you as a band, as a songwriter? And do you feel like, oh, we've got to have another hit? I mean, when you go back into the studio and begin the process of making a new record, how does having a hit like that impact the work?
Okay, so of course there's like feelings of like, I didn't know that was possible in the first place. Like, I didn't know that how it all worked. Watching it happen was, from the outside as a music fan, you just kind of feel like, oh, it's just the right people in the room and they make this thing and it comes out and it's a hit. And it's not really how it works. I did feel it. Asa and I sitting in the studio together, just riffing off of each other in this little lounge room where we wrote the song, you could feel it. And I thought that was like a really cool like moment. But we've had moments like that. We have Modern Jesus and Purple, Yellow, Red, and Blue. And we have So American. We have like these songs that you have that feeling in the room. It's not until you like let it out and you see where it goes, that you kind of really understand what happens when people grab onto it. And I do think it's really important to like keep putting out music. The best advice I think I ever got from anyone we ever went to the studio was, don't expect. You know, when you head into the studio with expectations, honesty leaves the room. Like that, whatever that thing is in you that grabs onto that magic that's floating around, it's in the ether. Like it's just floating by, and you just kind of riff on things. And with the right people in that space, they go, oh, I'm hearing it too. Oh, I see that.
It's accessing something.
Yeah,
right?
it really is. Like, yeah, that's the biggest takeaway is like you're not doing it. I mean, when I watch all of these artists, like it's never you doing it. There's something happening in that space.
You've worked with a lot of producers through the years, and just to name check a few, Paul Q. Caldery, Danger Mouse, Mike D, John Hill. You guys like to challenge yourself on every record, don't you? Can you tell us a little bit about that when it comes time to bring other people into your process?
Yeah, there's something that you create when you go into that room. You create this pressure. Like I grew up playing hockey. I did competitive gymnastics, baseball. We were snowboarding. Like, let's build a jump off the biggest thing we can find and see how far we can go.
See what happens.
Yeah, and that's what we did. We would just see how far we can launch off of that thing. I like having people in that space that challenge you. That, I mean, with Paul. Paul was my first experience outside of just our group of friends, which again, like our group of friends challenges you. That's why these like local scenes, these like pockets of music are so beautiful. It's all of these people playing together and them going, oh, this band's doing so good. Like I gotta like step up to meet that. Like I wanna match that energy. Working with Paul was, I remember going out there as a kid that's full of anxiety. I have anxiety on stage. I don't generally like being in front of people. Going in there and saying, yeah, Paul, I got a song. I have no songs. Like I don't write before I go into the studio, and I would just go in and play guitar start to finish and just say, this is a song. And it was being around him that really like pushed me to just really like focus what I was doing without saying much. And just his sonically, like Paul was so great to work with. We did some really amazing like rough mixes where he's riding the faders, and it was a very cool experience. We met Anthony Safri out there from Corner Shop, and I ended up making another record with him right after Satanic Satanist. We made American Ghetto, and we gave, so Satanic Satanist was 2.5, 3 weeks, something like that. We gave ourselves 10 days for American Ghetto.
Wow.
We were like, let's do a song a day, and that's going to be the record.
And that's write and record.
Yeah, it was immediately after Satanic Satanist. Same studio, same space. Being with Anthony, though, Anthony introduces me to Mick Ronson, who I've heard my whole life. Yeah. I've always heard his music. I just never listened close enough to it. But it's being around a passionate person who can play and who's going, oh my God, have you heard Moon Age Daydream, Bowie at the Beeb? Like, you gotta hear the live version where whatever, it's the most shrill tone, and Mick is just cutting, like, ripping through that stuff. It's being around those artists that want to push things and want to show you, like want to inspire you. Who was it after that? John Hill?
Yeah. Well, we don't have to go through every producer.
We don't have to go through all of them.
But what I did want to ask you, seeing as you brought up Ronson and Bowie, and we were talking before we started rolling about Tony Visconti, the producer. I had the good fortune when I first moved to the States, I moved to Woodstock, New York, and Mick Ronson was living there. And I remember seeing him in the local supermarket and being like, what the fuck? It's like, Mick Ronson is in the Grand Union, which was the supermarket chain in upstate New York at the time. And I got to meet him, and he was a fantastic guy. But tone, talk about tone, because a lot of people don't really sort of understand that. We hear people talk about tone, but what actually does that mean to you when you say Mick Ronson's tone?
So Mick Ronson was always like a really, it's not what I grew up with. So hearing it from Anthony was like, yeah, it was just this like, wow moment. I grew up on like Motown, and I grew up on these like really like warm, thumpy, flat wounds and these like hollow body guitars. Like I really love like a really full, like rich sound from guitars. And Anthony opened this whole world of like AC-30s and like these amplifiers.
Valve amps.
I never even thought to plug into that amp.
Yeah.
It seemed
you have
like
to wait for it to warm up, and sometimes it doesn't.
I mean, that was a really fun experience working on tone with Anthony, who is just a real master of it. It's one of those things I really don't think a lot of people understand, like how important that is to a guitarist or to players, like getting that tone. For me, it's something that's like baked into your DNA, and it's something that happens when you're a little kid or in the womb, like hearing music. The thing that draws me to it is that I'm always chasing Aretha Franklin. There's like there are these like just really amazing guitars, and I always just heard it in the background, and it's fuller than you expect. I watch people always try to like turn up my mids, and it makes me cringe because they're like, I know that's what you want to do with a guitar, but
sure,
it's not.
That's not what I want.
That's not the thing that I hear in here.
So the album is called Chris Black Changed My Life, and I know there's obviously a story behind this. Can you tell us a little bit about Chris?
Yeah, so I met Chris with my friend A.G. Rojas, who I'd met through another friend, Mike Reagan. This is the coming up in music. I never really hung out with musicians. We never really had musician friends. We were movie nerds. Like we grew up, like introduction to music for me was Pulp Fiction and Wayne's World. And it was
good renting. Intros.
We had this video store with this amazing video selection, and we would rent these movies. And I just remember growing up always loving the way this visual, like it was like this aesthetic was like contrasted by the music. Like you could, it didn't have to fit the scene. Those are the directors that I always really loved, the ones that knew how to elevate the scene without putting music that seemed like it fit. You know, those music supervisors are really special, and it's the directors involved. A lot of our friends are directors, music video directors started out in that scene. And they all kind of came up together. We had this really great circle of friends. And Chris is in there. And at one point, AG was coming to a show. He said, can I bring my friend Chris? Chris came over and just immediately at home, him and AG together, just like constantly, like it is nonstop laughter with those two. And I have anxiety on stage. And it's difficult for me getting up there. Chris just has this like, explosive personality. When he walked into rooms, it would just, everybody's laughing and he's checking on everyone. And there was a point in this band where we had honestly kind of started drifting apart. And I think it happens to every group. You just start having different ideas about what the sound is gonna be or what. We're making Woodstock, and it's taking us a long time. We're with Mike D and Danger Mouse, and working with a lot of like really John Hill, these really great people, and it felt really stressful. And at some point, we're out here working on the record, and I'm hanging out with Chris, and I was just like, you need to come on tour with us. You need to be in front of people. You need to be doing this. And we brought him out as an MC in a rock band, which to me, I mean, through Anthony, like discovering things like, where's the dude that just dances on stage?
Happy Mondays.
Yeah, we need Happy Mondays. Like, we need that. Like, yeah, Dandy Warhols. I just got a tambourine. I'm here to, like,
yeah.
I'm vibing, man.
Yeah.
So that's what Chris was to me. Chris was like our friend that just comes and dances on stage. And, man, it's so funny. Like, it just the energy, the way it lifted the mood, like, everything changed. He came on stage and it was, we're in between our drummer, original drummer had just left. And Chris just came out on stage and made us laugh every night. And he would sit back there and he'd be like, oh my God, between songs, oh my God, can you believe it? We're here together, we witnessed that. This is incredible. And it gave me flashes of Phil Anselmo and Pantera, and Phil just saying, I don't know if I can swear, but that's effing badass.
Yeah.
Like, he would say it to Dime. And that to me, Pantera was my first concert. That was something that always stuck out. Like, Phil is hyping the band.
Yeah.
From the band.
He's your hype man.
You are in the band.
Yeah.
You can't say it's rad. I guess you can. That's what Chris did for us. He like just brought everybody together. He healed all these relationships, and yeah. Not only that, he's just like physically a huge dude. Like, if you were ever in a situation where you needed to get out, like, he will literally pick you up and carry you out of the room.
So Chris passed. And obviously, yeah. This is your thank you?
Yeah, Chris loved attention. Like, he's just such a beautiful person. And I wanted to honor that friendship and also just talk about people in our lives that change our lives. I mean, like we were talking earlier, Mick Ronson changed my life. Anthony changed my life. Chris is just like, realization that, like, it's just the importance of all these people around us. And they don't have to pass to honor them, but it's just really talking about people who really did something for us. And that's what the album is really, to me, that's what it's about. It's community. It's about being introspective. And it's through a buddy like Chris who checks you and goes, I don't think that was very cool. And you say, well, you're a pretty smart dude, and I trust that.
Yeah.
I will not do that again.
I'll take it from you.
Yeah.
There's a few collaborations on this record, and the one in particular I wanted to ask you about is the one with Natalia Lafourcade, because you were a fan of a song of hers, right?
Yeah, her music in general.
Yeah.
So right before the pandemic, I had been having these jaw issues. And my jaw was locking up, it's clicking. Doctors, my dentist, everybody's like, oh, it's TMJ, like you have TMJ. And it's pretty common. It'll just massage it, we'll do some like PT or whatever, and like get you sorted out. You wear this mouthpiece at night. Okay, cool. I'm in a lot of pain. And we're finishing up these shows. I'm in Anchorage for AFN, Alaskan Federation of Natives, this conference with all Alaskan Natives. And I'm sharing a room with my mom. And just that night, my jaw locked up. I couldn't close it, middle of the night. And I'm massaging it. I'm doing the TMJ thing. And massive pop. And I had broken my jaw. Like, basically, you have this, like, the mandible in your jaw broke off the top of it.
Wow.
On the right side. And I go in, we get the x-ray, and we finally see what's happening with my jaw, which is, oh, my God, when did you break your jaw? That's what the doctors are asking me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, oh, it was... J- just the other day, I was sharing a room with my mom. I said, no, when did you break your jaw?
It happened a while ago.
Yeah, the left side of my jaw had been broken, and it was just ground down. It's like a third of the size that it's supposed to be. It's this nasty-looking point.
Shit.
And it's just, like, bent in. And I don't know when I broke it. I'm a pretty reckless Alaskan kid. Could have been anything. I do remember at some point in high school, this clicking that had happened, but we were skipping school, snowboarding,
getting not thinking about a click.
Whatever we could do for fun that weekend. It had built up all this pressure and it broke my jaw. When this break happened, everything just went off the rails and I was down. I mean, I didn't think I'd ever sing again. Really depressed. I mean, I was just in so much pain trying to prepare for what they were saying is going to be a pretty intensive surgery.
And rehab.
Yeah, to fix everything, it was like there's this really brutal surgery involved. And I had to spend time stabilizing my jaw. During this period, I split teeth just from the pressure buildup. I was splitting teeth, I couldn't even tell. Natalia's music was given to me by my friend Josue Rivas. He came over to my house one day. We were hanging by the river. I can't really talk. I'm like cooking food for everybody. And we have these little pods that we're living in now. And Josue says, hey, I want to give you some music that is really soulful and healing that you don't have to think about the words. Because he knew I couldn't sing. And I couldn't really think about that. So I ended up listening to this music over and over again. Dude, my brain is weird with music. I don't remember song titles. Like, I can't tell you Beatles song titles. And that's all time. Sat there listening to this music over and over again. My jaw starts working just enough to sing. And you can hear it on the record. I mean, there's a song called Plastic Island where, if you know, like, I'm singing through my teeth because I could finally get back in the studio and I was like, sitting with Asa, singing through my teeth to get this song out. Anxiety, singing through my teeth. Fast forward, we go to Sonic Ranch. This is where I started my Atlantic Records career. In the Mountain in the Cloud was recorded out there. And we want to finish this record. We're out there and we're hanging out with Adan Jodorowsky. Natalia is there. And that's the beautiful thing about Sonic Ranch. If any artists don't know, like, this is this really beautiful place. Everybody comes together and it's really magical. We all eat dinner together. We all hang out. It's on a pecan ranch. It's just really fun. And hanging out with Natalia for a few days. And, like, she's rad. Like, this person that I'm hanging with is so cool. I hear she's, like, a big artist, you know? Somebody said that. Like, I just think she's cool.
Yeah.
Adan's cool. Like, I like his take on music. And there with Bhaskar in the last night, we're like, like, let's go into the studio, and let's listen to all the music that we've all been making. And we're in there, and we're playing music. And Adan's, like, playing his music. We're playing our music. Other people's music in the studio. And Adan goes, Natalia, I want to play them some of your music. What should we play them? She's like, oh, I don't know. Like, whatever you think. He's like, oh, you know, like,
right, but she's being cool.
She's so humble.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
That's exactly the person that I met. It's right. Like, yeah, it's whatever you want, whatever you think. As soon as he hit play, I was like welling up. And I couldn't believe it. We're in this studio with the person that helped me get through all of this.
Right.
Like, she...
But coincidentally, right?
Yeah, we just ended up there.
Happened it was
just
to be this, in the same place.
We ended up there together, and I was just blown away. I was sitting there, like, trying not to just start bawling and hugging her. And I went and sat with her, and I was like, you pushed me to get through this and make music again. And it was, I'm so happy to have her on the album. That is, I can't tell you how things like that happen, but they do, and I feel really lucky to be around people like that.
So you guys played pretty relentlessly up until you were forced to stop, like everybody else. And now that the record is about to come out, we're doing this in May. I think it comes out in about a month from today, actually. It's 23rd today. It comes out June 23rd. Sound about right? Anyway, whatever. the point being is you're going to go out and play these songs, but you're not doing what you've done in the past. You're going to do a few shows, but you're going to do like career-spanning sets. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect if they come see you this summer.
Yeah, so we went and toured straight out of pandemic. We went out with Alt-J, and there was kind of a lot, I would say, about that. Everybody was touring, and I was watching this going, man, I'm watching like everybody playing like in real time, like these young bands that were like, I was telling you earlier, my nephew like graduated during the pandemic, and there are all these bands that just want to get out. Like nobody can get a bus. Everybody's on tour.
Everybody was so desperate to get out again.
Yo, bands that have been doing it, get out of the way for a second. Let these bands come out. Let them play some shows. Like give them some space. At the time, it felt right. But as we got into that tour, we realized that there was a lot going on internally within the group, which is just, I don't know if it's the pandemic, but it kind of put, it just threw everybody off. I still see it in creative circles. Mm. There's this weird weight to everybody. I mean, everything has this weight to it. And it kind of tore the band apart in a lot of ways. And we've never practiced. We've never done any of this because we toured nonstop. We never had to. It was just being back out on that tour after 3 years down, after touring on this album for just, relentlessly touring this record, playing every festival.
Woodstock. And,
playing on Woodstock. We were playing every festival. You have this pressure to be like, okay, over half of this audience doesn't know our music. They're here because, hey, Portugal the Man's, I've heard of them. So you're kind of forced into this structure. And coming out of that, I just wanted to break out of that structure and not live in that right now. I want to go play some like really special shows. I want to play something where we can bring back music, where we can play with friends and do things the way we've always done it. I mean, I didn't think I'd ever sing again. And launching back into it with a tour the second the doors opened did not feel right. And this may be a year after that, but I just looked out and I said, I want this record to come out and feel the way it should, which is, it's an important album for me. It was a real healing record for me, and it's pretty brutal in a lot of ways. First time I've ever stepped into a practice space and wanted to play a whole album. Now it makes me want to play the old shit. Mm-hmm. I want to play that, like, those prog riffs again. I want to do all of that.
Well, you've got a lot of stuff to pick from as well. I mean, how are you going to put a set together, or are you going to do it differently every night?
I think we'll do it differently for each one of the shows.
Right.
At least, like, bring things in and out.
Sort of, like, rehearse a certain amount of songs and then have them available to pick from, depending on the night?
Yeah, I think so.
Or not?
you sang rehearse right now. It's like, no.
Well, no thanks. Yeah.
We did show up in December. We played some, like, older songs. And we practiced the week before we went out and did the shows. This is my personal feeling. I know other people, Quincy Jones would probably disagree, but.
We were just talking about Quincy, yeah.
I think rehearsal kills rock and roll. Like, it just absolutely murders it. You know, like, I like Heartless Sunrise, but yes, I love the live version so much more because it goes off the rails. And that's what I want to hear.
Right.
I want to hear, like, I know how it goes. I'm not doing that.
Sure. You want to see how else it can go.
Yeah. Where else can you take this?
Right.
That's the beauty of live music, seeing where it can go.
Totally.
And living that with people, with having anxiety and feeling uneasy getting on stage. My favorite thing in the world is being around people who are passionate about something. I like being around people who care so much about music that they're going to take time out of their day to come watch it. And I've never felt like, hey guys, here we are. You're here to see us.
Right.
I'm more like, yo, drummer, like, let's
see what happens.
I want to watch this show
sure.
too. This
is so
fun.
Yeah.
It sounds like somebody yelled that they want to hear this song. I think we should play that because now I want to hear it.
Right. Well, it's going to be an interesting summer, no doubt.
It should be.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for coming and, talking to me, first of all. And then I'm going to get out of the way, and then Kyle and Zoe are going to come out, and we're going to set up a band thing here. And you're actually going to play a couple of songs, and you're going to do a Bowie cover. So we're not going to say what it is just yet, but great meeting you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, dude, thank you.
Pleasure.
My religion is a piano hanging over my head, about to break free, and I see it moving. You gotta pick up the groove and let go. Everyone I know is running from the afterlife
these days to make it sound sweet.
If it's the last dance, you can count on me. Phone is ringing, paint a tunnel on the wall, escape before the anvil falls. Gotta keep it moving. You gotta pick up the groove and let go. Everyone I know is running from the afterlife
these days to make it sound sweet.
If it's the last dance, you can count on me. One, two, three, four. Everybody get on. In my life is going on. One, two, three, four. Da 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 da. Five, six, seven, eight. Da 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 da. There's a stranger at my
adore.
A toy soldier coming home from war. Now I adore. And out of darkness I was born. So bittersweet. This grim generation. Grim generation got a hold on me. Now the television's on, painted black. See the Bible going down, baby, reel it in. Got a monkey on my back, but I'm cool with that. We're right back where we started. Daddy's coming back, let's get started. Hey, there's a stranger at my door. A toy soldier coming home from war. Now I adore
darkness.
Like it's all never been done before. At my door. Like it's all never been done before. At my door,
knocking.
And I was born so bittersweet.
So bittersweet.
This grim generation.
Ooh.
Got a hold on me.
Ooh.
This grim generation. So bittersweet, this grim generation got a hold on me. This grim generation gotta let it be. When I was born, I came to be. When I was born, I came to be. When I was born, I came. To be, I came to be, and I was born so bittersweet. This grim generation got a hold on me. It's got a hold on me. I'm an alligator. I'm a mama papa coming for you. I'm a space invader. Be a rock and roll bitch for you. And keep your mouth shut. You're squawking like a pink monkey bird. And I'm busting out my brains for the world. It, baby, let the real thing on me. The church of my love is such a holy place to be. Make me, baby, make me know you really care. Make me jump into the air. Your rig unto me. him, oh yeah.
The SoCal Sound Sessions are produced by 88.5 The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Nick Harcourt. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce, edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College, streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.